Michael Meets is a podcast interviewing regular people about life, work, their interests and aspirations. Coming up in this podcast, Anya Farris talks about the things that have helped shape her life, from being raised by a community, telling us about her most embarrassing moments, what it was like to attend Europe's largest single-sex school, St. Louise's, knocking out a stranger in her own living room, what Christmas was and still is like in the Farris household, and the fact that her mother can throw a slipper like a ninja. In the podcast, Anya mentions the word lifted. Bear in mind that in Belfast, that also means to be arrested by the police. I have to warn you that there is the odd swear word in the podcast, so if you're fragile or with small children, perhaps it's best to listen later. The year was 1977, the year that Fianna Fáil won the general election and elected Jack Lynch as the Taoiseach of Ireland. It was also the year that the Queen of England visited the North to celebrate her Silver Jubilee, and the year that the peace movement founders, Mairead Corrigan and Betty Williams, won the Nobel Prize for Peace. It was also the year that Anya Farris was born, in the city of Belfast, but more importantly, in West Belfast.
The day I was born, the day my cousin was born, there was like a big major event, so I was like asking my mummy about it. My mummy has the worst memory in the world, like the worst, she doesn't remember anything. So she was saying, no, there was nothing that happened that day. And I was like, right, okay, dead on. I don't think anything did happen that day apart from me being born. But I never started growing my hair until I was three. So I wasn't allowed out of house without a hat on. So I was called Baldy Onion until I was three. So that's stuck with me. And then when my first niece was born, we were all talking about who the godparents were and all this. It was around about Halloween, so we're all having a drink at my aunt's house. And I was going, my couple of aunts were there, and I was like, sure, is my godmother there? My aunt Anne. And she went, oh, I'm not your godmother. And I, for all my whole life, I thought our Anne was my godmother. So, and I went, oh, right, okay, well then, who's my godmother? And they all stood, and my mummy, who has no memory, and her sisters, and my dad, just laughed. He just stood and laughed, because I was going, no, seriously, who's my godparents? Then, if it's not our Anne, and somebody else, and they were like, it wasn't Emma. Remembered every, now there's five of us in our house, right? Remembered every other single person except mine. I don't even know who my godparents are. Still to this very day, don't know who my godparents are. And every time I bring it up, they all kill themselves laughing. And I'm not sure if it was christened. And then, the whole joke of it is, there's probably two ramen then that were pulled in off the street. And turf lodge. And our annoying keeps going, no, I definitely mended you that night because they all went out for a drink and I mended you, so you were christened. So that's how they know, because they all went out for a drink.
Oh, Jesus. And how, so, long, yeah. How long did the nickname Onions?
Baldy Onion. Well, my granddy used to call me it. And like a few of my aunts and uncles would still, or my sister Alice, and she would go, where's our onion? So still to this day, like a wee bit. Mm.
And you said there's 5 years. How was that split? Was it like, Two boys, three girls.
Three boys, two girls, and I'm smack bang in the middle, which is probably why they don't remember my godparents, because the middle child is So, but don't even know why I started talking about that.
Because I was asking who wore the trousers.
Who wore the trousers? I know. I suppose, well, if she said, you wear your daggets in, everybody all stopped, even though it was her that done the thorn, done the swinging digs. Yeah. But he just needed to say one thing, that was it.
And did you notice a big change when your dad got lifted and was doing the 8 years in the house? Like, was it hard for her?
See, we were, well, the youngest at the time, our Brayton was 9 and I was 16. So we were all kind of up when he was lifted then. And so there wasn't really much of a difference, because then that meant Alison and Mark were working. I was at school, but would have been going to work. Would have been like getting ready to go working. So we all kind of pitched in then, you know, and it was just basically, look, my ma has to work. We all need to just pitch in here and do whatever we can. So we did. So it didn't really, not that it didn't, it did make a difference for him, not there, obviously, you know, but just did what you had to do.
It was different than all, like, three toddlers on their own, I suppose.
He set up a co-op and she'd done all that kind of stuff as well. So really, really community orientated. So I grew up, like, basically with the community in and out of the house. And whenever my mummy was working, I'd say my daddy had been lifted or whatever, then, you know, you went to your neighbour's houses and you spent time with them. And then they set up New Hill as well. So basically, we were all brought up in the community, and probably why most of us got involved in the community as well then.
And do you know the co-ops you set up? What was that?
I know, I always thought it was the actual co-op shop. I don't think it was. I think it was like a community thing. Do you know, like, where people needed, if they needed something, or, because they used to, do you remember the big European cheese thing? That was, well, do you remember all the cheese mountain was brought in? So she would, like, give cheese out to everybody, and that sounds so weird now, like, but, like, everybody got cheese through the door. But so she would have organised all that, and she, like, her and, Jesus, it was Mary McLean and Geraldine O'Regan and Eilish Riley and, who we were talking about the other day as well, McClure, can't believe, can't remember her name, like, grew up in her house, but they, there was, like, an old abandoned building that was meant to be a community centre, never took off, and it was just round the corner from us, and they got together then and basically booted the doors open and opened it up, because there was a lot of rats going on and stuff, and young fellas and girls being really seriously hurt. So they were like, wait, look, we need to open the doors of this place and get them in there, keep them off the streets. So they done that. So that's how New Hill was set up.
Mm.
So they done all that. But the co-op thing, I'm nearly sure it's like just, you know, families that needed that wee bit of extra help, where it was like putting money in so that at the end of the year you would get money out and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Nearly like a credit union.
And Anya, what was school like? What have you any
memories of school? I have nearly a memory like my ma.
Is that a good one or a bad one?
Not the best. Went to Holy Trinity in primary school. And what can I remember from Holy Trinity? I remember the teacher slapping me one day off a fucking, what do you call them, bench. We were doing a Christmas play or something, I can't remember now. They give us things to play with. You don't give kids things to play with and then tell them to be quiet and sit down. Mm. So we had these wee, like, streamers, and I was so excited. We were singing something. And she was like, wait, everybody be quiet and sit down. And I sat, and I was still sat. I was still sat. And she slapped me, and I fell off the thing. I know. So I remember that. I was in P1. What else can I remember from school? I remember...
And did your man not go up, like, when she slapped you?
I can't remember. I can't remember what happened after.
Mm.
She probably did.
Mm.
But I remember... that's all I can remember about that. What else can I remember from school? Primary school?
Like, who was your best mate in primary school?
Right, so I think I had an imaginary friend in primary one called Francesca, because she wasn't there again, P2. So she either left the school or she was imaginary. But my best friend growing up was Donna Marie McLeod.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Donna Marie McLean did, really. So we, because she only lived around the corner, so we walked over to school together and back from school every day and all that. So we're still friends now. So they would have been my best friends in primary school and throughout secondary school as well then. Who else? I'm trying to think who else I knocked about with them. Ellie Malloy, me and Ellie Malloy. What else I remember from primary 7 or primary 6 or whatever it was, we went to like a wee reading class during the day, and me and Ellie Malloy had forgot our books one day, and instead of telling, the teacher was sat and talking, right, and instead of telling her that we forgot our books and we had to go back to our class, we lied basically and pretended that we needed to go to the toilet, the two of us at the same time. So we sneaked out, run up to the classroom, got the books, shoved them up our jumpers. They were huge, big books. We were only like P5, P6, something like that. Shoved them up our jumpers and walked back into the room again as if we were never away. And she was like, what's that up your jumper? We were going, what are you talking about? I swear to God, pretending that we didn't have big gigantor jumpers or big gigantor books up our jumpers. So we got caught on sneaking out of class. So we got sent back then to our real classroom, and we hid in the toilets until everybody came back. Just walked in with them. So then we got scooped and sent to the vice principal. And then I went to St. Louise's the year Sister Genevieve left and Sister Rosaline started. So we started then that year. So I met loads of people, I suppose, there, like, as well. But still, it was, like, Donna Marie, Deirdre, Jenny, Aisling. We would have been a wee close group of friends because we all went to Holy Trinity together, then went to the same school like together, so
yeah,
and knocked about with each other outside of school too.
And what was St. Louise's like? Because I know like there's documentaries made in St. Louise's at one time. They were saying it was the largest single sex school in Western Europe, and probably still is actually.
There was in our year group, there was 320 girls. In each class, there was like 35 in each class, something like that in each class. And it was like, it went from 1A to 1M. So that's how many was in our year group. It was huge, huge year group. Like, So it was a big difference, like going from Holy Trinity, wee tiny school, to there.
And was St. Louise strict?
Not allowed to wear, you're not allowed to wear more than one ring. You weren't allowed to wear hoop earrings. You weren't allowed to have nail polish on. You had to wear your full uniform on the way home from school, including your blazer, even in the like the warmest days. And we used to get attacked by CBS, and so CBS is a boys' school up in Glen Road, and then Corpus is a boys' school down on the Falls, or well, bottom of Falls, White Rock. So we were in between them two schools, and on our way home, if it was snowing, we got hit with snowballs. If it was raining, if it was sunny, we got hit with eggs or water balloons. So we were all walking home one day, big crowd of us all walking down the falls, and all these girls come running up from the bottom of White Jack. They've got water balloons! So we were all like, Jesus. So we jumped over the graveyard fence, and we're going to like go up through the graveyard so we can get hit with water balloons. And when we jumped over, Deirdre Riley's skirt got caught on the railing of the graveyard.
On the spike.
And just ripped right off. So we were all standing at the other side of the wall, hanging from all these fellas, and Deirdre Riley's skirt was hanging off the railing. And we laughed that much that one of the girls that was with us wet herself, won't say her name, literally wet herself. So we had to take our blazers off and wrap them around Deirdre and walk home with one of them just squelching in her tights. No way home. Yeah, so that's kind of carry on.
Is that a mad killer, like? Back then, uniforms were a lot cheaper now, but then they were like...
I know. Well, I think her mummy had a sewing machine now, anyway, so she was all right. But her skirt ripped right off. Hilarious. Oh, it was hilarious. Like, so, school was good. I'm not academic, so I was there more for the crack, like, than anything.
Was there a teacher you tortured a wee bit more, or got the crack out of?
Our religion teacher in fourth and fifth year, he was screaming. Can't remember his surname, but his first name is Brendan. And we used to, because he played the guitar and all, so we used to try and get him to play his guitar as much as he could, so we didn't have to learn anything. So we were going ways up nuts on his birthday as well. We found out when his birthday was, and we bought a big jam pair of brown white fronts and tacked them up onto the blackboard. You know, happy birthday, Brendan. He was scundered. We tortured him. But it was brilliant, like one of the best teachers I ever had, like he was amazing. I remember coming in one day, we all done these exams for him, like, no, like we mock exams, and he came in raging because we all failed, and he was like shouting all these questions to people, and he got them in, and he went, what age was Jesus when he was born? And I went, who even knows that? Because I never knew. And he was like, 33! That's how I found out what age Jesus was when he was born. Or when he died. When he was born! What age was Jesus when he died? What age was Jesus when he was born? Not.
I thought it was a fucking trick question.
When he died. Yeah. 33. That's how I found out.
You'll not forget that now. And what was there a teacher you detested, like?
A few. Aye. Who did he hit? Oh God. So we had two form teachers from first to third year, Miss Roberts and Mr. McLean. Miss Roberts was like, do you ever see them people? She looked like a poodle a bit. And she was just, she did. She looked like a poodle with brown hair. I don't know. And she was one of, she's like really sunken cheekbones and cheeks and big high cheekbones. She just looked evil. She just looked evil. I didn't like her for that. She was dead on, but I just didn't like her because she looked evil. Who else? Me and Donna Murphy got caught on one day writing notes to each other, and they weren't like normal wee notes, it was just like weirdo notes we used to write to each other, like about fucking, I know we can't even, Mongolian cheese eaters in the Himalayan mountains, because we were bored and we were just writing things, like wee funny things to each other. And the teacher came over, caught us on, made it get up, actually read them at the top of the class without the swear words in it. And she was like, I hope your grades are as good as your imagination or something. But promised us she wasn't going to give it to the head of year, Miss New. Wasn't going to give it to head of year. This is it done. Right, let's move on from this and blah, blah, blah. We were like, right, dead on. No, sent to Miss New the next morning. Individually brought in and was read the very notes by her set. And she was sitting as close as me in New York. And I had to hold in my laugh the whole time. So I looked like I was crying. Because it was tears in my eyes because she was going, fucking this and fucking no. I had to sit there and go, I'm really sorry. And that one was crying. Yeah. I was really trying to hold my laugh in. And then, so I didn't like her either.
Do you know your group of friends, like Donna Marie? Actually, yeah. I know what
you know Donna Marie and all,
I don't know the others. But what do you think made you all stick together? Like for from primary school right through? Because not everybody like
does that.
Yeah. So what made you all stick together, do you think?
I really don't know. Our mummies are friends as well. Like me, Donna Marie and Deirdre's mummies were friends and worked in New Hill together. So we were brought up through New Hill outside of school as well. So, but we were just really close. You know, Deirdre's family would have been quite similar to mine in terms of like they're a Republican family. So they knew the crack with jails and all that. And Donna Marie's actually as well. So we kind of knew all of that about each other. And that would have kept us close. Like, the day my uncle escaped from jail, Donna Marie was the one that told me, my eyes in P2 or something. She's like, our uncle's escaped today. My mummy and Mary were like at the fence out the back talking to each other about it. Do you know, it's like, our uncle's escaped from jail today. Do you know, so we kind of had all of that going with us. And then we just were really close. We knew everything about each other. We ran in and out of each other's houses all our lives. And then because we knocked about them with the girl, because me and Donna Marie both have family in Turf Lodge as well, and we knocked about with girls then from Turf Lodge too. So we kind of, it was just one of them things that we were all pretty close and got on really well with each other. And when we do meet up now, still, like, we wouldn't see each other all the time, but we keep in contact through Facebook. Or like last year, me and Donna Marie went down to Stevie's house in Dublin and done a whole drinking spree in Dublin last year and do all that kind of stuff. So I think it's just because we know each other so well, that's what kept us together. And then just everything that was going on around us too, you kind of needed to keep good people around you.
When did you leave school then? What age were you?
Oh, I stayed right through. I stayed right through to 6 year, even though it was a wee bit simple. I swear to God. Aye. So stayed right through to the end till 19, I think I left in 95. But I was already like doing youth work, voluntary outside of school, and training to do peer education. So when I left school, I literally went, where'd I go when I left school? I walked into a job in youth work then. The girl who was my peer educator when I was like 14 or 15 left work and I got her job. So she was like my youth worker, mentored me, trained me all the way through. And when she left work then, I got her job when I left school. So when I was 18 then, I was straight into work and straight out of school, straight into work, doing youth work and loving it.
What attracted you to that job?
Right, from I was a child, I always wanted to work with kids. I wanted to be like a playgroup worker, you know, like, or a nursery worker. Because I was just, I think I've always been a real people person, you know, and I've always wanted to help people and do things for people and all of that. It's just my personality. And probably what I was brought up with as well, you know, I was brought up in a community oriented house. You know, like with my mummy working in New Hill and running stuff there, and then with my daddy, different type of community work, you know. But what happened was, you know, he would have worked with like guys who were in a good bit of trouble. And he would have helped to set things up for them. So like, when New Start was set up, it was a car crime project. So he would have helped to set that kind of stuff up. So I was brought up in that kind of environment. But I loved babysitting and I used to call the people's doors and ask them, could I take the kids out in the pram for a wee while? No, things like that. And then when I'd done the peer education and I got like accepted to be a volunteer peer educator, I just fell in love with it. I just thought, this is what I want to be doing. You know, it's going out, it's educating people, it's giving them information that's going to help them, whether they take it or not, is entirely up to them. But as long as I know that I'm doing something that'll probably resonate in their head at some point at a later time. So I think it was that. It's that helping kind of set of things that I love about it.
Yeah.
That I've always loved about it. And what I'm doing now, like the mental health stuff, I got involved with that. The organisation that I'm working for now actually helped me a couple of years ago when I was pretty low. And they helped me through, you know, kind of got a wee bit of information from them, learned a whole lot more about mental health, mental illness and all of that, and then thought, do you know what, actually, this is what I want to be doing now, is giving information to young people about their mental health, because so many young people around these areas, you know yourself, like in West Belfast, probably in like inner city Dublin as well, high rates of suicide. So, and it's not because people don't know enough about mental health, but mental health kind of brushed under the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think that you only should talk about mental health when it's bad, and not really talk about how to look after it and all that. So
yeah.
That's why I'm in doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
You know, I love it.
Isn't it funny though that like, how life circumstances still turns you to something that you love. So
yeah.
You were saying, you know, it was a time when you were low.
Yeah.
But now you're, because of that, you're doing something that you really love.
And I was able to get myself well through and all of that. Like, when my daddy was in jail, he ended up, or not when he was in jail, was it after he got out of jail? But because, again, I'd been through that experience, then I ended up working with Tarnal and prisoners' kids and ex-prisoners' kids. So, you know, it is. I think my own circumstances have kind of shaped what I've done all through my life.
Yeah. Mm. And is there any like successes that you see maybe young person walking about today from maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or more, and you go, fuck, did like that conversation obviously really help them or something?
Yeah.
But then you might even have the conversation. Is there anything like that that's happened to you?
I stand outside a bar one night with my friend having a smoke, and a wee guy we worked with, like, years before, who had got himself into a bit of bother and all that. We were doing outreach at the time. And 2 a.m. ones where you just do things and say things, and you don't realise that what you're saying and what you're doing, everything you say and do is going into their head, no matter what it is. But if you're swearing at them and all that, it's going into their head and they're taking it in. But this wee lad, he's a man now, he has a child and all that. And we were standing outside the bar, and he was chatting away to Mary, who I would have seen as being his main kind of support and all of that. And he went, I was lying in jail. He ended up getting lifted. I think it was an armed robbery or something he'd done. And he says, and I was lying in jail one night. And he was saying, it's something that you said to me. And I went, what? And he said, it was something that you said years ago. And I never thought about it once until that night. And it was in my head. And it was something about, I can't even remember the actual words because I was a wee bit drunk when he was saying it back to me, but it was basically like something to do with what you do with your life, or what you do is what you get kind of thing. And he says, and here I am lying now, Christmas, not seeing the child, blah blah blah. She's right, like, I need to do something with my own life here, if nobody else can change it for me but me. And that was basically what he says I said to him. And I was like, right. And he went, so in a way you kind of changed my life, even though I was lying in jail at the time when I realised. But I was like, well, right. But you still, like, I've met, there's young people that I worked with way, way years ago, and they're now youth workers themselves, and I helped them to get in the different bits and pieces. Like, it's amazing, like, to see, but reminds me of how old I am. So they're, like, all married with kids and all now, and you're like, stop it.
Is there any, did you ever do any other jobs? Was it always community work, youth work?
Worked in a shop for Christmas period. Hated it. Hated every bit of it.
What type of shop was it?
It was a clothes shop in Castlecourt. Hated every bit of it because smelly people used to come in and all. It was terrible. And I used to have to do, like, the changing rooms. But I did hear the best line I've ever heard in my life. Two girls went, I was at the front of the shop, and the way they used to, the shop used to have like shoes and that at the front, and there was this gorgeous pair of shoes at the front of the shop. I was eyeing them up, and this girl and her friend walked in, and she went, say, they called the other girl Veronica. She was like, oh my god, Veronica, those shoes are so beautiful, my vagina just whipped. I had to run. I could, no way, you're not allowed to laugh or listen to what they're saying and all. I had to run to the other side of the thing and just stick my head in the coach. So I could hear me. The best line ever. Yeah. Hated that. Even though it was working with the public and all that, but you know, you don't have the freedom to do and say and all that. And then I worked in the BLB youth office for 2 years.
What was BLB?
That's the Belfast Education Labour Board. Mm. So the youth office is basically manages the schools and youth clubs, BLB run, all over Belfast. And I was an administrator, and I was looking and watching all these people's work coming in, all their evaluations, all their money, all the money that was being put into all these youth clubs. And I know them because I've been a youth worker for so long, and I was going, they don't do fucking half the work that I know projects in Belfast do. And they're getting all this money pumped into them. They probably have about fucking 6 kids coming in a night, and there's all these other projects going to the wall, mm-hmm. you know, that are doing amazing work, and our season's getting money pumped into getting their building done up and get pumped into doing all these programmes. That was sick in the heart out of me, like. Mm-hmm. So it did. But as well, I was doing administration, like, and I think I was a wee bit jealous too, because I wasn't out doing youth work and meeting people and doing all that, so I hated that too. So I got back into youth work again then. Mm.
What was your first holiday on you? Like, without your parents away?
Oh, without my parents away. Do you know what? Most of the travelling I'd done was all with work. So, like, first proper holiday without my mum, that, but it was with my aunt, was over to, where did we go? Spain, but I can't remember what part. Yeah, for like a week's holiday. So that, and I was like in my 20s. But most of the other stuff I've done, like I went to Canada, went to Canada twice, done Toronto, done Kitchener. Then when I was in Canada the first time, my daddy was in jail, and he had been writing to a big guy in Montreal. And when he found out I was in Canada, he sent down train tickets for me to go up and stay with him and his wife in Canada. So in Montreal, amazing, like, really, really amazing. So done that. Where else have we been? Set up a project, me and a few others volunteered a few years ago, set up like a charity and raised money, went out to South Africa and worked in a children's home doing programmes with the kids, renovating the bathrooms. And when we were there, again, the couple that we were staying in, it's like a travel kind of place. The couple that we were staying with, another English couple, they were brilliant. So they told us about this girl up in the mountains in Drakensberg, was running a HIV, not a hospice, but like basically it was in the rural areas. So it was in the townships and stuff. So she had this kind of medical centre right in the centre. And then she worked with, I think it was like 90,000 people all around her. So we went up there then for a couple of days as well and brought up supplies and done bits and pieces of work with her then as well. Unreal, like, I swear.
What are you most proud of?
Most proud of? Being here. Surviving. The most proud, I think what I'm most proud of is when I see a young person or somebody that I've worked with or that I've done something with doing well. I'm proud of that. Things that I've done. Started university, and I'd never ever thought I would have got into university. I always went, no, there's no point. Wouldn't get in. And I got into university and done the first year and a bit. Had to leave because of the job that I'm in now. I couldn't let me out for a day a week to do the thing. But done that first year, and actually by the end of the first year I was sitting on a first and got a Dean's Award for it. So I'm proud of that.
Brilliant.
Mm.
And would you consider going back?
Oh, aye, definitely, definitely.
What's your most embarrassing moment? And are you willing to share it?
I've had a few. there's been quite a few. Got my head stuck in the railings outside Felons one night, trying to talk to my friend on the phone who was whispering. And I was in my head, I was going, oh my fucking God, they're going to have to ring the fire brigade to come and get me. But I ended up, my mate was standing behind me, kissing a fella, so she didn't even see anything. And I was trying to talk to Mary on the phone, and the more I moved in, the more I realised then, fuck, my head is clearly stuck in this. So see, when you realise your head's stuck, it starts to swell up, because you're panicking. So I started panicking, and my head started swelling up, and Kathy was behind me, and she says, all I could see was your bum wiggling, trying to get out. And I knew fine rightly all the fellas and the felons who were working were watching as well. Yeah, so that's one. Walked into a lamppost in the Falls Road in front of everybody coming home from school one day. And knocked the fella out in our living room one night.
You what?
One morning. Knocked the fella out in the living room one morning. So our house, it depended. My daddy used to bring people home all the time. So you could have walked into our living room to anyone. So one morning when I was a child, I came running down the stairs Saturday morning to watch Saturday morning TV, and swung the living room door open, and there was a fella lying sleeping on the floor, and I hit him in the head with the door, and his head smacked off the wall and must have left him knocked out. And I looked around, and the house was all these fellas just lying on the sofas and the floor and everywhere. And back upstairs, my mommy was like, there's strangers in the living room. Not that that was like a strange thing. And she was like, I know, just go down and watch the TV. So I went, no, just let on, they're not there. So I did, because I was a wee bit of a weirdo as well. When I was a child, I'd done exactly what I was told. So I went down the stairs, climbed over the fella, never looked at anyone, sat down. There was a fella lying along the sofa, and I was going, right. So I went over and just turned the TV on and got up and just sat on him, as if he wasn't there, and watched the TV. And it was all, we all had these accents. I had no idea where they were from.
Yeah.
And everyone was just sitting in gym. So they were trying to talk to me and all, and I was pretending they weren't there, because I was told, slide on, they're not there. So I did, and I watched the TV, and pretended I couldn't hear them. So they used to do wee things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And Anya, do you think the troubles affected you in any way? You know, growing up in a community that, you know, well, your family was involved, but also the whole community was, and people knew, do you know, what was, you knew, even as a kid, you knew something was going on, but you didn't understand. Did it affect you in any way, like good, bad, indifferent, or?
You can't say that you've grown up here and not been affected in some way. Do you know what I mean? We use humour a whole lot, to like, when we talk back about things, like when the house was being raided and stuff, you know, and we'll talk away and be like, here, do you remember the night? There was a night that came to the house, and we were all, obviously, because they never just came at like 3 o'clock in the day. It was always, Brits and Peelers. So they came at 3 in the morning, and we were all got out of bed and brought down the stairs. And on the way in the door, my daddy was going to us, right, don't talk to them. Don't answer any of their questions. They know everything already. Don't be answering any of your questions. So bearing in mind, we were all young at the time, and our Breton, I said earlier, our Breton was named when my daddy was lifted. So he would have been about 7 then, 6 or 7. So we all were all seated all around the living room. So it was like Niall and then Breton in the middle on the sofa and me beside him. And then on the 2 chairs was Mark and Alison. So this girl, we used to call them bitches, the bitch was walking around the living room, and she went to our Mark first, and she was like, what's your name? And he never listened to her and ignored her and all that. And went to Alison, and she gave her the biggest dirty look you've ever seen in your life. And then she got to me, and I ignored her. And our Brayton was only a wee child, like, so he was sitting in the middle. My daddy and mummy were standing there, and she got the Brayton, and she was like, what's your name? And he went, Brayton Frosch. And she went, right. And she stood back and she's writing it down. Our Brayton, our Niall was beside him, and he went, Brayton, you were told not to say anything. And he was going, Niall, I just told. So Niall's name came out. So our Alison shouted over, what are you doing? Stop saying any charge names. And our Mark says, Alison, you better stop shouting at the kids. They're only kids. And she was going, no, it is, Mark. Don't you be talking to me. So every one of our names, all, she's, the bitch just stood in the middle of the living room and wrote them all down. And my dad then, because we were all touting on each other then, and my dad went, right, stop talking! Don't talk to my children! So we talk about like that, you know, we will laugh about things. Loads and loads and loads of things. So I, like, it's definitely been affected, like, different, like, was in a bomb one time.
What was that?
I know, and I'm laughing. It's not even, like, the same people here think. This is a God's honest truth, right? I go to everybody. I could know I was really sheltered from everything when I was growing up. Our house was raided twice a year, if not more. I had an uncle in jail. My dad was lifted. Well, I had a whole lot of uncles in jail. And my dad was lifted and all this. And see when I go, oh, no, I was really sheltered from it. Like, I didn't really know much. And then I start talking. They're like, seriously, Anya? Your house? No, like, we were sitting in the fort one night. So the fort, basically, there was a big army barracks right at the bottom of Dermot Hill. And we used to just sit round the timbers off it. Because there was nowhere else to go. So we would have sat round the timbers off it and used to get tortured by the Brits. Or we used to torture them, depending on the night. So one night, there was me and a couple of friends, and our formal was coming up. So what age would I have been? At 17. Just sitting around the timbers, really boring night. And we're all sitting there talking and going, well, my, I wish something would happen. It's so boring. And so Cass, Brian Cassidy to the formal with me. So he was our, and his girl was our Emma. She wasn't going to the formal, whatever way, anyway. So we're all sitting there, we're talking about how boring it was and how nothing ever happens. And at the top of the, where we were sitting, at the very top of it was like the houses in another street, and there was like a big boom, you know, like a big flash, and we went, fuck, because there was a fella up there who used to constantly do his car, like just constantly out fixing his car and doing all sorts of his car, and we were like, fuck, he's blew his car up, and we were all laughing, and then the next thing, it hit the timbers at the very top, at the top of the fort, so it hit the, like the top hanger, we were down at the bottom one,
yeah.
And it hit there, and it just, poof, big flash, and then the sound, and we were like, nope, the bomb. So we all run. Cass grabbed me, because I was taking him, left his guard, grabbed me and run me out of the fort, because he was going, we're one day's fucking formal. And but the thing is, we weren't allowed to sit in the fort.
Yeah.
So we were always being told, don't go near that fort, don't go near that fort, because the RA were always trying to hit the fort, and we were always kind of shielding it. So we run out of the fort, then run up Dermot Hill. Peelers were everywhere, Brits were everywhere. My mummy and her sister and friends and all were all the way out for a wee jolly day out. So their minibus arrived back in the middle of all this. So they all got out full of this minibus, all dancing up Dermot Hill. Woo, what's going on? We're like, two mortars just hit the fort. Who was, oh my God, and all, oh my God, is everybody all right? And we were going, there was nobody in the fort. No, no, what are you talking about? Like, we weren't there. And then it's, but Ciara Vernon fell on her way, jumping off the thing. She fell and her two knees were bruised and cut a wee bit. And on the news later on, it says nobody was injured in the attack. And Ciara was like, nobody was fucking injured. Fucking bruised knees. Brian Cassidy near wasn't at his formal.
Yeah,
really. I know. So it's all, and that's the thing. Humour, I think, has got, well, me and my family through it all.
Yeah.
And all the different, like, stories that you tell and the way you tell stories, and but when you really do look back at it, it was a bit horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, so when I say I was a wee bit sheltered, I kind of wasn't. Yeah. A wee bit sheltered, because I knew growing up, like, our house was always being hit. Do you know, when I was younger, we didn't know at the time, but there was a loyalist threat on the house. So then all we knew was that we got a new front door and drop bars, and a gate put at the bottom of the stairs, and a wall built, so, and drop bars in the back door. That's all we knew. So we used to have a laugh of that. We'd, like, do sword fights with the drop bars, and anyone that came to the door at night. During the day, you could see out the window, so you're seeing people coming in, but at night time, you had to shout out, who is it? Mm. And if nobody answered you, you weren't allowed to answer the door.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so people standing outside used to be a bit scundered to go, it's me. So, but they had to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so it was that kind of stuff.
What was Christmas like, Dermot Hill?
Brilliant. Christmas in our house. So Christmas Eve, Christmas Eve's my favourite. Christmas Eve then, obviously, my ma would have been doing all the preparation, you know, the stuffing and the turkey and all that, so I would have helped her with that. But Christmas morning, so when we all believed in Santa, well, most of us believed in Santa, or when we all believed. So what used to happen in the morning was, you weren't allowed to get up without my mum and dad. So we used to be up near every hour, getting in and going, can we go downstairs now? Can we go downstairs? And them two were wrecked, going, no, no, get back in the bed. No, you never slept when you were a child, you were so excited.
Yeah.
And then my ma used to come in and get us all up, and we would all get up and all be all delighted and all excited and all, and then my dad would go into the bathroom and stand in the bathroom or go to the toilet or do whatever he was doing for an hour, and we'd all be like, hurry up, because we've been waiting so long. And then we would go down the stairs, and when we, so my dad would go in first, and every year he would let on to fight with Santa in the living room, and go, hey, bring that back, do it, and then come back out and go, Brandon, listen, money after fighting with him, like, he would pick one of us and be like, money after fighting with him, or he's way up bent at Chimneyer, he's talking your stuff with him, I couldn't stop it, and then one of us would be roaring, and then he'd be brought into the living room, and it's all sitting there, the excitement, like, so that was Christmas in our house, like, now, when we're, now, well, obviously, now we're all older, so I would go up and stay, my mummy's now, still over Christmas, and, Christmas Eve's the same, it's like get all the preparation stuff, but then all, they're all coming up to get all the stuff for the kids, you know, like Mark would come up and Niall and whoever, so they'd all come up to get the stuff for the kids, and we'd all be, and now we're all in our like 30s and 40s now, so I mean, there's no kind of excitement, but my ma still would do like a bag of stuff for us every year, yeah. You know, presents, and every year our Niall or Mark would try and look into the bags, even though they get the same thing every year, we'll try and look into the bag, and then like our Brandon would be like, ma, our Brandon's, Aaron Al's looking in that bag and all, he's no,
yeah,
so
yeah.
It cracks brilliant. Like,
do you believe in God?
No, well, so this is a really because of a question it all the time, question myself all the time with it. And the first answer I always say is no, and the reason I always say that is because I just think, there's something out there, I don't know if it's God or if it's energy or whatever it is, it would be kind of spiritual, you know, because, and this is why I kind of question, because I think, you know, like I've an angel sitting here in front of us, like, you know, I think there's something there, whether it's angels or something, and then if there's angels, then obviously there must be a God or something. Don't believe in organized religion. I think it's caused more wars and more trouble than enough. And I think that I'm a humanist. So I change all the time. I'm a humanist, but I would be a wee bit spiritual as well. You know, I do believe in energies and what you put out there, you get back and all of that. But the God thing, I think, is kind of more created by men, the control, not just men and women,
yeah.
The control, you know, to control situations and people and all of that. And I don't like that. I do believe that, if there is a God, and I do sometimes be like, do you know what, I'll have a wee chat then and go, listen, so if you're up there, you know, fair play to tell you, you've created all this stuff, but, or have you, do you know.
Sort it out.
I want to win the lottery this week. Yeah, so, no, I'm not really too sure about God, but there's definitely something,
all right.
I think.
If you were to tell yourself, write yourself a letter for about 15 years' time,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to listen back to this, what would you have hoped to have achieved or changed, or what type of life would you want to create it?
In 15 years?
15, 20 years, 15, 20, 30 years,
whatever it is, like in the future.
Whatever your future is, I suppose.
Yeah. That is a good one. I have asked this of people. I think in the next load of years, I would like to be more settled in myself, because at the minute, I suppose, I've got a lot, like even talking about the God thing, like I question a lot now, you know, I'd love to do more learning, love to do more travelling, want to get back to university, definitely. I just think, if I was to write myself a letter, it would be, get yourself back to university, sort yourself out, take a look in the mirror and sort yourself out. I think I would still like to be part of the community. I would still like to be doing community stuff, because I really do believe in people working together and working to achieve something. And what else? What else? Something for me. Yeah, more settled in myself, and more time for me to look after me. So I want to learn more about looking after myself and what I can do. Do you know, like, because I go out and do all these coping things with people and how to manage your mental health and how to look after yourself and what you can do and all that. But to be honest, like, I would love to have a list of things that I can do for me.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. And start doing them.
Okay.
That would be my thing.
So I can remind you of that in about 15 years' time. I'll ask you, listen to your podcast.
Remember you said that.
If in 50, 100 years, 150 years, some distant relative of the Farages finds this interview.
Right.
What life advice would you give them, or what would you tell? What would you say to them?
Right.
If they stumble across this.
If they wanted to know about our family, or about me, or about what to do,
What piece of advice like has helped you in your life? I suppose help. What's the best bit of advice, or would you pass on that you've learned yourself that might help them live in your life?
Right. Yeah. That's a really hard question.
I know.
Really, really hard question. See, because I've talked all about humour all the way throughout this, and how humour has really got me through huge things that have happened in my life. It's not just me laughing at things. It's like, it's spending time with family and, you know, and talking through things and humour is a way of us getting through it and talking through it. So for me, the best bit of advice that I could give to a future Farage would be do a bit of research on the history of the family, because it's really amazing. But also hold family really, really close, because they're the most important people. You know, they're your best friends when you're younger. They'll be your best friends right throughout your life, no matter what's going on outside of everything that's happening in your life. You still have your family to go home to. So hold family really close would be my advice, because that's, for me, the big thing, like, definitely. And if you ever get a chance, record what they're saying.
On your fries, thanks very much.
No problem, thank you. Is my shake your hand there?
Oh no, I'm getting the microphone.
I'll shake your hand a minute and give you a hug.
No, you're grand.
Many thanks to Anya for inviting me into her home and giving up her time to record this podcast. I really enjoyed catching up and chatting away with her about Belfast, old friends, and reminding each other of memories forgotten. There were so many parts of the podcast that was just us chatting about people we knew, the community sector, and both our hopes and dreams for the future. Anya has a wonderful way of being that makes you feel at ease and you can open up with her, and I totally understand why she has such an impact in the work that she does. You can join the conversation over on Facebook, facebook.com/Michael Meets, or follow me on Twitter, @Michael_Conlon, @Michael_CONLON. Also, many thanks to you, the listener. I've really enjoyed getting your feedback online via text or in person. It's great to hear that many of you also believe that the lives of regular people are far more interesting than those of the celebrities we hear about daily. If you do enjoy the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. By doing this, this helps this podcast get more listeners. And whatever you're doing for Christmas in the new year, I hope you have a wonderful time and spend it with people that you love and care about.